This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Top of the hour, it is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross right here at the Mint Gaming Hall. Ian Franklin, Kentucky, there's our closer. Jensen Lewis back home in Cleveland, Ohio. David Bierman's going to join the program in the very next hour, talking all things Open Championship. Can't believe Open season has already come. Championship season in golf has already come and gone with the four majors. And the king of Connecticut, Will Hill, will join us. And if you're listening today, as I was before our show, you were checking out the Should Have Bet More podcast right here on the network, wherever you get your podcast. But we're going to talk more about the golf and certainly more about the soccer, football, as they say over there, and what a spectacle it was over here in the United States. And that's where we begin our highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
It only took one with that defense of Spain, and they got it done before we got to kicks. At the end, had we gotten through nil-nil, it might have been a different story here. But Spain does get it done. Argentina was down a man, so it was 11-on-10 there for quite some time into that extra time, and that's where Spain pulled out the 1-0 win. Jensen, it did feel like, though, that if there was poetic justice, that maybe soccer justice was served, that the best team, at least in this tournament, did in fact win.
Boy, what a journey it was, right? Because their first match in group play against Cape Verde, so many questions after the draw with the smallest nation to be in the World Cup. You had David and Goliath. Many thought that La Roja could be vulnerable. They were anything but. Just one goal conceded in the entire tournament. That now across eight matches of this 2026 World Cup. Previous record was two, shared by Spain, who won in 2010, Italy in 2006, France in 1998. And remember, they did have to play an extra game because it's now the first 48-team World Cup. So think about that, extra entire 90-plus stoppage time to be able to only give up the one. Kylian Mbappe on Saturday ends up taking home the golden boot because Messi was held in check, scoreless in this match. And Spain, yes, they are the host country, Dave, in 2030, installed as the short shot at plus 450 to defend the cup. We are counting down to Spain, Portugal, Morocco. What a tournament it was, though. Take a bow, United States. Excellent hosts. Well done. 100-plus matches. And boy, it lived up to the hype, no question about it.
And tip of the cap to Lionel Messi, if that's the last time we see him on a stage like this. What a way to go out. And again, Argentina was trying to do something you just don't see in the World Cup, and that's somebody go back-to-back. Remember, they were 10-1 betting underdogs here at the beginning of this tournament, and they get all the way oh so close. But maybe the end of, some say, and most say, the greatest of all time in Lionel Messi ever to do it. I don't know that Ryan Fox is going to go down as one of the all-time greats when his story is done, but he just wrote a new chapter of his story at 39 years of age and becomes a first-time major champion. And he did it in dramatic fashion, birding the last to become the champion golfer of the year. Jensen, I know I didn't see this coming. Love the guy, love the story, but a surprise ending at Royal Birkdale to win the last major of the year.
150-1, his pre-tournament odds, Dave, and drifted as high as 750-1 during round three, in which he shot a 62. Okay, so just to give you an idea, one of the low rounds of the entire tournament, yet he was at 750-1. I know there was a better Ben Fox, great friend of the program, does a great job on Yahoo Sports. I believe he had said that there was a better at DraftKings Sports that placed a $55 wager on Ryan Fox to win the Open during round one when he was 2,000-1. 55, here's a $110,000 winner for you on that $55 wager. And Dave, it's not about just winning, right? You know, you got to get the trophy home somehow. One of us, Ryan Fox, is. I want to say we got some great video here of him getting on the bird. Yeah, that's Ryan Fox, champion golfer of the year. And the claret jug is carried on overhead. That is hysterical for a major winner, but he's not letting that out of his sights. So congratulations to him. So, and he's not even a first class guy. Just won $3.5 million. No, he's just sitting in Delta Comfort or he's sitting in coach. I mean, just a hysterical video all the way around.
Going back to New Zealand, I guess that's something you don't check that, right? You're going to carry the Claret jug on. Like, what if they say to you, I'm sorry, sir, Mr. Lewis, you're going to have to check that bag. You're like, oh, no, I'm not checking this bag. There's no way this is going to be lost at baggage claim. I'm holding on to this Claret jug. Amazing story for the New Zealander. He FaceTimed with his family and his kids yesterday, and I don't think the young kids really kind of grasped yet. He's like, you're going to see daddy on TV very soon. Yeah, because I just won the Claret jug, but I'll get home as soon as I can. So on his way back with that, arguably one of the most famed, if not the most famed trophy out there in all of sports. The Red Sox trying to get their hands on a big time trophy. That'd be a World Series one. And I don't think anybody saw this coming here a month ago that we could actually talk about the Sox in this seriousness. But 13 wins in a row, you sweep away the Rays to get to that magic number here of 13 in a row, Jensen. They're creeping. Six games back now in the AL East. Their numbers come down to 9-1 to win the division. And it feels like right now, pretty good bet that this team might make the postseason.
I mean, 15 and a half games, they were behind in the middle of June. They were behind the Rays for the top spot in the division. They begin play today just six games back. And as you mentioned, 9-1 to win the division. If the playoffs started today, they would be the final wild card team. Mm-hmm. And so that's crazy to think about. Second longest win streak, or it ties for the second longest at 13 wins in franchise history. And by virtue of taking all four games away from the Rays, it actually helped their arch rival. The Yankees, even though they lost 2 of 3 to the Dodgers, they are just a game and a half back now. And boy, the Yankees have their own issues offensively. We'll tackle much more in the Daily Diamond. But let me redirect here, Counselor, because I think it's fascinating from a prisoner of the moment standpoint. And I just happen to look and see where some of the odds are here for right now. When you see these kinds of win streaks, is it a blind bet for you just to continue to tail? Because I can tell you right now, it is nothing but Red Sox money. 84% of bets, 87% of money. And I don't know if you want to get in front of this train. I certainly don't. The pitching matchup really favors Boston. Peyton Tolley is one of the hottest starters in Major League Baseball up against Shane Boz. Is it an auto bet for you tonight to have the Sox make it 14 in a row?
I don't like to bet against streaks to end. I'm not one of those no-pass guys. I think you want to keep rolling the dice here with the Sox and see how far and how long this thing can go. So if you made me wager it, that's probably the side I'd be on. And again, pays to watch VSiN by the books. Mentioned that team the day before we turned the page here to this month, that might be the team you'd want to get invested in as a long shot to have the most wins. Not saying it's going to get done, but certainly the leader in the clubhouse right now, the Boston Red Sox, to have the most wins this month. Justin Verlander is going to call it a career, and when he gets done, Jensen, he's going to be going to Cooperstown. I don't think there's any debate about that. And Shohei Ohtani is also got issues right now here, Jensen, with his knee. We can't wait to see Justin one day get his immortality, but the bigger focus has got to be on Shohei for this season for the Dodgers here, Jensen. How concerned would you be there if you're Dodger Blue?
Yeah, this is pretty significant in the announcement made, especially about the uncertainty of the timeline. There is no timeline, and I think that is the biggest thing that I take away from this injury prognosis. He is missing his scheduled start on Wednesday, but usually with these issues, Dave, you might have it's going to be a start. We're going to push him back. No, manager Dave Roberts saying that he will stay off the mound indefinitely because of the irritation in the left knee. Now, we're going to put a pin in it. We're going to follow it. When you look at the odds right now, I don't think anyone is running to the window to fade the Dodgers by any means.
No.
But Shohei's been one of their best pitchers, and they are still down now three starters. If you add Ohtani to Blake Snell to Tyler Glasnow, Yoshi Yamamoto was brilliant. Again, if you watch the opener of that doubleheader, a complete game for him and just another excellent start in his Dodger tenure. But National League pennant, odds right now, and by virtue of Spain winning, Dave, one of the great cross-sport parlays that I've got in pocket, I now have a Phillies 109-1 World Series future. Phillies are 7-1 to win the National League. I'll give you the single-digit odds, and I'll get your thoughts on it. So Dodgers plus $1.05 to win the National League. Okay, they have been kind of odds on at some point throughout the year. Brewers are 5-1, Braves 6-1, Phillies 7-1, Cubs plus 850. Would you rather have one of the longer odds there in single digits, or do you still believe the Dodgers will get it right and get it healthy by September, or at least to the end of the season, and do what they kind of did last year?
You know, I always mention Shirley Bassey, just another case of history repeating. I hope it doesn't for the Brewers and that the hitting goes away in the postseason. I'd like the Brewers at 5-1. I like the pitching. I think they can match the Dodgers there. It's just about the offense. You know that Dodger offense is going to be there come September and, dare I say, October. But I think if you made me play the price points, Jensen, I'd probably take the 5-1 in the Brew Crew and hope that if they face the Dodgers, it's in the NLCS and not the DS earlier and don't have to face them that early. That's why it's important for that seeding. OKC does what OKC does in that they like to make moves and they like to stockpile picks. Well, they get 3 second-round picks now here for Lu Dort. Now, it's not the first-round picks that they got years ago, and that got them SGA and some other great picks from yesteryear. But, Jensen, it feels like OKC realizes they had to make a couple moves, and they're starting to shuffle that deck just ever so slightly.
Certainly are. So this ends up being a three-team deal. And again, the headliner there, of course, Dort going to the Hawks. That means 3 second-round picks to OKC. Give them now 7 second-round picks altogether. And they also shed massive payroll to get them under the second apron. They've gotten rid of $200 million so far this offseason via trades of Dort, Isaiah Joe, and Aaron Wiggins. This is a Sam Presti masterclass, man. He continues to find ways to make sure that they are not only short-term, but long-term viable to stay in this championship window.
Now, I want to see what this looks like for the ATL as well, because, again, we don't get a lot of true defenders in the league, and Lu Dort feels like one of those guys and what they're trying to do in the ATL. When we come back, let's get back to our football. It was fun having the World Cup here. But what about American football? What about the Baltimore Ravens and their outlook? It's next right here on VSiN by the Books. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match it. Here's the thing. Pro bettors, they spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't know and don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you're going to get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and so much more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
The VSiN NFL Betting Guide is out as we speak. Whether you're betting futures, win totals, divisional races, MVP, Rookie of the Year, or Super Bowl odds, our guide is going to help you get ahead of the market before camps begin. And they're getting ready to begin, people. So inside, you're going to get breakdowns of all 32 teams, projected win totals, best bets from VSiN experts, future analysis, power ratings, and so much more. Get it today. Our football special is just $175. The sooner you sign up, the more value you will get with full access to everything we do across every sport through the Super Bowl. That includes daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, and 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. I can't believe it. We're getting so close. And we're getting very close to breaking down every single team, including the Baltimore Ravens and Jensen Lewis. That's where we begin today's edition of the Daily Gridiron.
This is the Daily Gridiron.
Ah, yes, there is a new man in charge in Charm City. Jesse Minter used to be there as a DC, then went over there and was with the Chargers and Brothers Harbaugh. But, you know, you never really stray too far out of the Harbaugh tree, it feels like, if you were the Ravens these days. So even though John is no longer there, and he's with the Giants, it's Jesse that replaces John. And it's kind of the Ravens' way here, Jensen. So I wonder how big a change it really will be at the head coach position.
Quite the offseason. If you follow the saga that was the Baltimore Ravens. Okay, first of all, I had to get the head man right. John Harbaugh is out. Jesse Minter is in. And it kind of stays in that lineage of defensive-minded guys. And as we know, when you have a new young coach, specifically as a head man for the first time, that's always a place to start a handicap. Should they be the best team in the division? I think they will be, and then some. Dave, I bring up the saga because it looked like they were going to have maybe the move of the offseason by trading for Max Crosby, and then all of a sudden, the medical concerns and issues and other things that happened, they quickly pivoted and got Trey Hendrickson from the rival Cincinnati Bengals, 4 years, $112 million with 60 guaranteed. They did also draft the edge rusher Zion Young in the second round at number 45 overall, and an old friend coming home, veteran Calais Campbell, back on a one-year deal. So not a surprise, the defensive reinforcements are what they are. It was actually the offensive line rebuild, too, that I think should have gotten a little bit more run, and potentially it might. And I think that's a huge thing. Big Ione from Penn State, they took with the first selection, number 14 overall. They do sign guard John Simpson to a 3-year, $30 million deal. They'll have a little competition for the center position with Danny Pinner, Javon Wynn, and Corey Bullock. Ronnie Stanley will stay there at left tackle. So the interior, Dave, should be improved on paper, but they will need some continuity there for sure. Let's face it, we know what they love to do. They want to run the football. They want to RPO with Lamar Jackson, with the King, Derrick Henry. And now it's about what you got on the outside. So, Dave, let me start there with you, because it might be one of the more value mid-round selection, maybe two mid-round selections. You get Jacoby Lane from USC and Elijah Surratt from the national champion Indiana Hoosiers. We've said this for a while. Does Lamar Jackson have the weapons on the outside to return as a Super Bowl contender? I think they might. But handicap it in your eyes, especially in a very competitive division. I know you and I do like the Bengals, and we look at the Steelers to be a bit better than people realize. But are the Ravens still the class of the AFC North, regardless of what the record was last year and with the new head man in Jesse Minter?
Tough question, counselor, to answer under a court of law. In a court of law, I would say this, Your Honor, that Father Time is undefeated. I know Lamar Jackson is only 29 years young, but dare I say he looked a step slower last year. Look, the injuries can take effect eventually, even to some of the best to do it, right? Lamar Jackson is one of the best to do it. You don't win multiple MVPs in this league if you're not one of the best that we've seen in that position. My question would be, If he's lost just a half a step, or a quarter of a step, what made him an MVP twice and what made him the best right there for a couple seasons was that elusiveness, that nobody could get him in the open field and even in the pocket if he extended plays with his arm. He's got a big arm, too, by the way, people, right? So he can beat you multiple ways. But if that, it's not gone. But if it is limited and you take away that special power, it's going to happen to Josh Allen one day, too. And then you're going to go, can Josh Allen? It's going to happen to Patrick Mahomes one day, too. And then you'll find out, like other greats of the past, like a Steve Young, like a Randall Cunningham, those guys, once their legs were taken away, could they still be effective in the pocket? That's going to be the question that at some point we're going to have to ask about Lamar Jackson. I don't know if we're ready to have that conversation this year, Jensen, but that day is coming. Now, you know me when it comes to handicapping teams. If you're looking in the futures market here, win total sitting at 11.5, that's too high for me. And it is because Jesse Minter is a first-time head coach. I do trust Lamar Jackson to be able to, like, hey, you worry about the defense, coach. I got the offense. I'll take care of this side of the ball. And that's what great quarterbacks can do. That's what Tom Brady did in Tampa when they won a Super Bowl. When he got there, he said, Bruce Arians, you don't worry about this. Remember, they actually clashed heads for a little time with Bruce Arians, because Tom said, we're going to do it my way. And when they did it his way, they won a Super Bowl. I don't know that we'll get that, but when you get coaches that come in like a Jesse Minter, there could come a point of demarcation where Lamar Jackson's going to say, it's my team. I got this. By the way, that's what I want. I want a player empowerment with a guy that's earned it like Lamar has. So sometimes you get these young head coaches and they get immediate success. Sean McVay had it with the Rams. Even Zach Taylor had it with the Bengals early on, getting them to a Super Bowl. So that could be what you get at Jesse Minter. But that example and that list of examples is much shorter on the instant success timeline for first-time head coaches than it is failure. So, Jensen, I like this team. I like Jesse Minter. I think he's going to be fine. Who doesn't like Lamar Jackson as your quarterback? But when I still have a first-year head coach, that's going to give me a little bit of pause. I did predict the Bengals to win this division here at their price point. I like that at almost 2-1 versus laying odds here with the Ravens. That's how I got there in a price point. But I think if things go well and if things go as expected, this should be the class of the division. I'm just not ready to bet on it.
This is one of my favorite bets and one that I wrote up in our VSiN NFL betting guide. Lamar Jackson at plus 650 to win the MVP. And a couple of lines I'll give you. When 100% healthy, Jackson is the most intimidating, dual threat, dominant force to take the field. That's what I open with. Now you get Ioane, the tackle out of Penn State. As I mentioned, you get Danny Pinner and the center, right guard John Simpson from the Jets. Obviously, that's going to help the running game. And you talked about Father Time. Derrick Henry's 32, and he does so well in taking care of his body, investing, you know, what, $1 million just in the diet and of itself, and I love that. Here was the final line, Dave, and I'll parlay it into where I think the Ravens are in great shape. This Lamar Jackson MVP wager is risk versus reward. If Jackson stays healthy for the entire season and the Ravens challenge for both the AFC North title and the number one seed in the conference, the combination of elite production and piling up victories will be difficult for MVP voters to bypass. So again, a correlated play here. By virtue of our NFL betting guide there at VSiN.com, this is the 31st of 32 as far as strength of schedule. So the second easiest schedule on paper as far as opponent win percentage. You start in Indianapolis, which has always been a tricky spot, and it has been in this series, Dave. Colts 10-2 ATS versus the Ravens, their last 12. Then you're back home against the Saints, and road teams are 5-1 ATS in this Saints-Ravens head-to-head series in the last six. So you're already looking at two potential fade spots. If you're not saying you're going to lose, but ATS-wise, this might be a win-not-cover scenario. It's there for the taking, and I understand the argument too. First-year head coach, new system, got to figure it all out early, but if the schedule were to give them some relief, it certainly does early to allow them to kind of get those systems implemented. I'm bullish on this team. They were my pick to win the AFC and to get to the Super Bowl. I think it's an all-in moment for me on Baltimore with where they're constructed for 2026.
Counselor, if you would, for the jury, would you please reread in your own words the first line of your statement in that betting guide?
Yes. Win 100% healthy. Win.
That would be the key. Last year he missed significant time with a hamstring strain. 2022, it was a knee PCL strain. 2021, he couldn't play in the postseason with an ankle. The guy gets injured a lot here. When he's great, he's great. When he's healthy, he is exactly what you say he is, Jensen. You got to keep the great eight standing upright and don't let him run as much, and maybe that'll limit the injuries, because you're right. When fully strength, he is as good as the game gets. We've got some issues in golf. World number one sounding off on Bryson DeChambeau. Is he a cheater of the game? That's next right here on VSiN by the Books.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
Week 2 of VSiN by the Books on this Monday morning. Dave Ross and Jensen Lewis here coming at you. Going to have David Bierman join the program here in the next hour to talk all things golf and what we saw over the weekend at the Open Championship Royal Birkdale. And we're going to talk a lot about that as well. Will Hill is going to join the program, get our best thoughts from the King of Connecticut and some of his best bets that he has on the docket. But speaking of Royal Birkdale, it got a little heated over the weekend. That's where we begin today's edition of the Daily Docket.
Your snapshot of odds, trends, and futures. This is the Daily Docket.
All They're all over. Four majors in the books. Boy, it does go by fast, doesn't it, Jensen? When you get to April, May, June, July, you get one a month, and then the open season is done. Yes, we're going to have the President's Cup coming up. Yes, there still is something called the FedEx Cup playoffs, although Rory McIlroy said yesterday he doesn't even get excited about that. I'm sure the PGA Tour didn't love to hear that. But, Jensen, it was Ryan Fox who wins the Open, and that's the great storyline. 39-year-old, some would call him a journeyman. I think he's elevated from that stature, certainly now after winning a major championship, but he also had won a couple times on tour. So this is a very, very elite player that won at the highest regards yesterday by birding 18 to win it. But the story became something that happened just as we were getting off the air on Friday, and that was Bryson DeChambeau. If you go back to the fifth hole, and he pulls it way left on the fifth hole, and he's in some nasty cabbage over there. They've got a search party trampling down on rough, trying to find his ball. They do. Then there's a question as to whether Bryson, the way he entered to go approach his golf ball, did he improve his lie? And there's been all kinds of debate about this. Now, a couple things. One, they didn't address it right then and there. There is a rules official that walks with every group. This was addressed way after the fact, after the round was done, and Bryson went to sign for his scorecard, which was really good, and he was only one off the lead, and then was docked a two-shot penalty. And he objected. I mean, he strenuously objected to this and basically said to the RNA, hey, I did not improve my lie. They said, even if you didn't intentionally do it, you did, and therefore it's a two-shot penalty. And it gets back to this code of conduct of, do you take the player at the word? Because you're basically calling him a cheater at that point if you say, we hear you, you did it, and it's a penalty. And that's where the objections took place. A lot of the big-name players were asked specifically about this. A lot of them kind of deferred and said, we weren't there, couldn't really tell. This happens a lot on tour. Rory went after Bryson, said it's absolutely a penalty. I don't like the guy. It got heavy from Rory's side. World number one. Scottie Scheffler was asked about this after his round, not about how he played, and even a ruling that he got, but he was asked about Bryson, and this was Scottie's take on the whole situation.
You know, I think all I can really say is I think maybe we need to be a little bit more strict in the way that we are policing guys, but it's a little bit of a balance because you got certain guys like a Bryson who every shot he hits is going to be shown on TV, and you know, when you have camera angles that are far away, things can look different than they do when you're right there. And so, you know, we've done a good job of, like, I hate saying stuff like right out here because I don't want anything to get taken out of context. And, you know, all I'll say the rest of it is, like, Bryson, I've known him for a long time. He's a lot of things. But he's definitely not a cheater. I've ever seen him cheat once, whether you're having a putting contest over putting green or chipping contest or anytime we played amateur golf, I never saw anything suspicious. When you're watching him there from that camera angle, you know, maybe he was a touch careless around his ball, but I don't think he did anything intentionally. Man, you know, we've seen penalties happen with, like, you know, you remember John Rahm a couple years ago at the Memorial when his ball moved in the rough. And it's like, to the naked eye, can you really tell that? And so I think sometimes it's just a difficult position in the game of golf. Like when I was growing up, you always, if this was a line between things that were, like if this was the line, here are the rules, and this is the right side of it, and this is when you're doing things against the rule, you always try to stray really far that way. And I feel like at times, sometimes you see players maybe push it a little bit further than they should, and I think we need to kind of get back to the traditions of the game. Or, you know, maybe we do need to police things a little bit more stricter in the game. But like I said, it's a tough line to kind of cross. And so that's why it's hard for me to say anything like this. And, you know, Bryson is a guy that I've known for a long time.
Like I said, he's not a cheater.
He's not a cheater. No, that's the final line from Scottie. By the way, what a thoughtful answer, I think, from world number one. Mm-hmm. Whether you liked Rory's answer or not, didn't seem as thoughtful, maybe, and with the context that I think Scottie tried to give there. And it shows you that, look, there's personal animus. We get that between Rory said it. He doesn't like Bryson, and maybe that's going to skew his judgment a little bit, at least the view of the way he interpreted things here. But, Jensen, that's the thing. That's the crux of the matter. That's the heart of it, is essentially that's what you're calling him. And I know other people are saying today, hey, nobody's calling him a cheater. It was unintentional. He broke a rule. You're kind of calling the guy a cheater when he's telling you, no, I know what the rule is, and I didn't do that. And you're saying I did, and you're not taking my word for it at all. Jensen, this is where you get into that very gray area, and I'm going to get into more detail on this because it's not. This is not an isolated incident. We'll get into it tomorrow with more time to shed some more light on this. This is happening a lot now in the game of golf. We talked about it when it came to Joaquin Neiman at the U.S. Open, a two-shot penalty given there. But boy, it seemed like it really kind of deflated his sales for a guy at that point, certainly in the betting market, was the betting favorite to win the tournament until that two-shot penalty was assessed after the round.
Yeah, pretty remarkable. And again, no love lost, as you said, between Bryson and Rory. Rory dug himself his own hole, just knowing that he's taken the time off that he did. It also sounds like we will not see Rory McIlroy, until the St. Jude, FedEx St. Jude, I think, in Memphis.
That's right.
So it's, you know, about another month's time, if a little bit less than that. And that's a big three tournament stretch there. The Wyndham Championship there in Greensboro, of course, the St. Jude in Memphis, and then I believe the BMW Championship in St. Louis before the Tour Championship ends the month. But I think what we take away, and I appreciate Scotty, because as world number one, you have the platform that you do. And I'm sure that Bryson appreciated the supportive words. Hey, as an athlete, there are guys I played against, Dave, didn't like him. There were teammates I had, didn't like him. We made it work. Golf is so different because you are your own team. And when it is such a mental sport and you feel as though you have momentum the way Bryson did, and then when you're signing for your card, then, you know, the issues are what they are. I can understand why that derailed him for the rest of the tournament.
Yeah.
But he is almost fighting up against a pretty strenuous, you know, headwind. There are some, it's not isolated. I mean, we remember Brooks Koepka years ago, right? When doing the interview where he just kind of was like, let me pause before I was walking by. And then, you know, Bryson makes the videos about missing the three cuts before this open for the majors. And Brooksy chimed in like, cool story, bro, on the comments. So, we'll see. I'd be interested to hear your explanation tomorrow moving forward. But I think also in that regard, does that affect your handicap with Bryson in tournaments the rest of the year? Like, how will you handle his handicap, not just the golf, but knowing this is what he's up against as well?
Well, fortunately, obviously, we won't see Bryson again, at least not on a PGA Tour setting, obviously. Going back to LIV Golf, we'll figure out what LIV Golf is going to become. And a lot of this is the underlying things. And I think people are misconstruing. I'm not saying he didn't deserve the two-shot penalty. I'm saying it's selective in the way we dole it out. So people are, you know, it definitely was a penalty, this, that. That really is not the debate. What it is it's selective justice for some. And even Scotty alluded to it there. Maybe we need to do a better job of policing this thing in totality. So we'll get to that. So is it more policing? Is it less policing? The gray areas in the rule of golf, because they're supposed to be very black and white. And I think Scotty detailed it perfectly of like, hey, if the line is here, we need to all worry about being over here so that there is no gray area. Scotty was in a gray area as well. And that happened yesterday on 17. We'll get into that tomorrow a little bit with the spirit of the game and the rules of the game. And they can be very different, Jensen, and how they are doled out. And they do affect betting markets, and that is the key. So, like, let's just say that Bryson DeChambeau was back to play this week. That it'd be very tough to play him right now because he was in a spot. I know people got really nails on the chalkboard when he allegedly said, I might not play tomorrow, and then whether or not he held the RNA hostage overnight or for a long time for the tee times. That became another side story. So you can choose your fighter. You don't have to like Bryson. I'm not a big Bryson guy, and I'm certainly not a LIV Golf guy. That is not the debate here. The debate is rules for thee and not for me. And that is evident right now. Even Rory McIlroy, you mentioned not seeing him until arguably the St. Jude. He's not going to qualify technically to have full standing on the PGA Tour by playing 15 events. They created this stuff partially because Rory said create it, then he creates it, then he violates his own rule, and then there's no punishment there for it. So it's very selective outrage right now in the world of golf. And Jensen, that's something we're going to get to the heart of matter a little bit later on tomorrow and see if we can fix that, hopefully, for the PGA Tour going forward. What are the Raiders going to do at quarterback? Feels pretty cut and dry, but is it? That's next right here on VSiN by the Books.
tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
$30 million in guaranteed prizes. Cash in this football season in Las Vegas with three Circus Sports contests. Entries starting at $1,000, all with no rake. That means every dollar stays in the prize pool. Circa Millions, 18 weeks, 128 ways to win. Circa Survivor, pick one winner every week. Last one standing wins. And Circa Grandissimo, for the high rollers, $100,000 entry. Enter in Nevada, play from anywhere, $30 million guaranteed. Visit circusports.com for all of the details. Jensen, have you already got your plans out there for your pilgrimage out to the great Circa mothership in Las Vegas?
Yes. We are going to be out there. Just a real quick trip in the 21st, out the 23rd. Already set up with Tom and David there, Vegas Football Proxy. Appreciate them sponsoring us last year. Going to do it again this year for our joint entry. Going to go it alone on a solo entry this year. Excited to do it. So a lot of fun. Hey, we're going to catch our first ever show at the Sphere too. Cannot wait to take that in for the first time. So looking forward to doing that as well.
You're gonna love it. I was like, oh, this thing is really wild. You kind of, your depth perception sometimes can be taken away, but it is what a spectacle that is. Let's get to it with the Raiders and what we think they're going to be doing at quarterback this year. Because again, if you're looking at the AFC West, clearly you look at the Raiders and you say, well, this is going to be the worst team out of the four on paper. I think that's a fair assessment to begin the year. But when you get the number one pick of the draft in Fernando Mendoza, you bring in, you know, Kirk Cousins, and a lot of people making the mini-me comparisons of these two guys are cut from the same cloth. They could be stepbrothers. You know, one guy just a little bit older than the other guy and the rookie coming in here. Before we get into what you and I think is going to happen here at the quarterback position, let's hear from Ian Rappaport here. Because again, when you look into the futures market, which quarterback is going to play? Let's hear from the rap sheet.
Contract or new contract extension before training camp, going to be a lot more reps coming Carson Beck's way. And that is excellent, excellent news for him. I want to stay out west, but go to the Las Vegas Raiders. And do they really have a QB battle is an interesting conversation. Obviously, Fernando Mendoza, number one overall pick. It certainly seems like the way they are planning, the way they're hoping for it to all be, is for Kirk Cousins to be the starter at the beginning of the season, throughout this season, and at the end of the season, because that means he is playing well, it means he has stayed healthy, and it means Fernando Mendoza can just sit there and learn. And if that is the way it goes for the Raiders, that is absolutely fine. But it's not a guarantee. And the reason I say that is because we have seen this in the past. You say, all right, well, we're going to sit this rookie. Probably not going to play. He's going to learn. What if Mendoza hits the ground running so fast and so well that they say, this guy has to play? It might not be game one, but it could be early in the season. And if that is the case for the Raiders, that also is excellent news. Does make it a little awkward in the QB room, but still news that the number one overall pick is exactly who they hope he would be.
Very interesting, because how it certainly affects what we do from a handicapping standpoint. Fernando Mendoza to throw for over 3,000 yards this year, Jensen. It is plus money, but it's not big-time plus money, just plus $1.35. So if you think you want to get some longer numbers, 3,500, you can get to plus 275. He's going to throw for 4,000 yards, 7-1, 4,500, getting crazy here, 25-1. But, Jensen, I think we all believe that it's going to take your time, kid. What's the rush? We got KC8 that could be QB1. You take your time and get ready. But to Ian's point, what if he does look great? Do you think there would be maybe with a new head coach and a new quarterback? And we know we've gotten Kirk. He's the perfect mentor. Let's play the kid earlier than often. That might be a surprise to people in the betting market.
First of all, this news brings absolute joy to my ears. If you remember, Matt Eumanns, one of the most influential hosts here at the network for some time, came on with us and said one of the player props that he wanted to bet early was the under season passing yard prop for Fernando Mendoza. And I got to believe that hearing this news from Ian Rappaport, at least the report, that if they can avoid playing Fernando Mendoza at all this year, that is the plan for the Raiders. I absolutely love where I'm sitting with my passing yard under prop of 2,649.5. You and I sort of did the rough math on, you know, if he were to play, and we know injuries certainly a part of this NFL year and any year. But looking at where we are, if you look at just playing half the season, let's say that there's an injury and Fernando Mendoza plays nine games. He'd had to average about 294 passing yards to hit that over. And I think you and I surmised a bit like that's some heady stuff considering, you know, where a rookie quarterback is. And I don't care how good you are. I bring that up, Dave, because if you look at the back half of the Raiders schedule, let's say that Kirk Cousins gets through, you know, the first eight games. Okay. Here are the potential defenses that Fernando Mendoza may face at San Francisco, at Seattle, home against Denver, home against Cleveland, at the Chargers, home against Denver, at Tennessee, at Arizona, and then home against Kansas City. Okay, I like my chances right out of the chute of at least the NFC West defenses. We know what Denver does there at Mile High. You also get the Browns, even without Myles Garrett. Jared Verse comes in. You should still have a really top unit there. So I think I'm emboldened even more on Matt's recommendation to play the under as early as possible. And that number has cascaded down. I think we're now looking at a 2,350.5. That is the Fernando Mendoza passing yard prep. So we are a huge cushion as far as where the current number is. Even the touchdowns, the over under 12.5 right now, minus $1.22 to the over. Kirk Cousins, for what it's worth, is not listed right now on FanDuel where we're looking at those props. But I think it reinforces the point, Dave, is that even if Mendoza would play half the year, you're still asking a rookie quarterback to average almost 295 passing yards to hit the over at 2,649.5. So I like where I sit. Thoughts for you on Kirk Cousins, because this was a guy that you and I looked at, and I think we're going to be in on the Raiders on millions. And looking at where they are the first couple of weeks, of course, against Miami, we'll see what the revamped nature of that team looks like. The Chargers, always a tough defense, especially within the division. And then two difficult road tests going down to face the Saints and then to Arrowhead. Your thoughts early on the Raiders, just from an ATS perspective, with a competent quarterback in Kirk Cousins at the helm.
He's competent. I covered him in D.C. I really like the guy personally. Very astute. I mean, back then, people that might not remember, they'll never forget it in D.C. He's the fourth-round pick taken by Mike Shanahan. The first guy taken was the second overall pick and some guy named Robert Griffin III. So, like, all the cameras went to Robert, and there would be Kirk sitting on this couch that they had there at Redskins Park, and he'd be sitting there with this huge playbook just immersed in it. So you're right about this is going to be the perfect guy to give tutelage when it comes from right here and all the stuff that he possesses with his brain. I think the question now is, can he physically do it? Coming off the Achilles from a couple years ago, is he still able? The mind can do it. Can the body do it? And the concern for me would be that if you're a new head coach here in Kubiak coming over from Seattle and you're an offensive wizard, that's what you're known for now. And the signal caller that you want to pull the trigger just can't pull the trigger anymore. How impatient do you get? How much, if you get off to a slow start, do you ignore the calls from the fan base there in Las Vegas? It's going, let's see the number one player. Let's see what we got. We got to play him. You know, that stuff's going to happen. It's going to be a real thing. If Kirk is not physically able to do the job anymore at an elite level. So it's almost a correlated play. If you like the Raiders over 5.5 wins, then I would play the under in the Fernando Mendoza prop that you mentioned, Jensen, right? Because that means Kirk is able to do it, and they are winning. And the veterans, and I've had this discussion with you, and certainly in my D.C. days with a lot of veterans like Lorenzo Alexander, the veterans in those locker rooms want the veteran to play, with all due respect to the kids out there. They want the older guy that they know he knows what he's doing. They want it until the young kid proves it, and if they do, then you're going to win them over, and that's great. But it is a prove-it league, and they got to make sure you can do it. And so they're going to be rooting and pulling and blocking and tackling for Kirk Cousins early to keep this job. So if you like the Raiders over 5.5, it's juiced a little bit, minus $1.35, then you're hoping that Kirk Cousins can still physically get it done and that you protect him long enough so that the kid doesn't have to play. It's going to be fascinating because I think they've got some weapons there. in Las Vegas this year, but who's going to be ultimately the guy that gets the majority of that playing time? If it's not injury, I think it's going to be Kirk Cousins. If it is injury and the body fails him, then you got to hold your breath a little bit if you play those unders on Fernando Mendoza. But again, 5.5 is where they're sitting, 20-1 to win the division, Jensen. I've got absolutely no interest in getting involved in that extreme long shot at this point here with Las Vegas. We got a lot to get to here coming up here on VSiN by the Books. David Bierman's going to join the program. Boy, oh boy. We're talking a lot about golf and maybe anything but Ryan Fox winning the British Open and the Open Championship. And also the King of Connecticut, Will Hill, will join the program. We'll get his best bets. It's all straight ahead right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.